Hey, this is Wade with Wade for Wireless, and today I wanted to go over the OSHA RFI again. I got two more segments of this because it's due June 15th, so we'll see how many people really care. But let me start by saying thank you to the 929 people that got on Wireless Estimator to respond. 929 people. And also to the 29 people who uploaded their RFI responses directly to OSHA, and this is as of May 28th, 2015. So less than 1,000 people in the U.S. really care about what OSHA thinks, about how to influence OSHA. But for all you guys that did it, thank you. Really appreciate it. I think it's good. Apparently, there aren't as many tower climbers out there as I thought. So thought there were 17,000 or so. But apparently, 958 people, you guys matter. You're the ones that are making a difference, that want to see it go better. I mean, you can even upload anonymously, and people couldn't even upload anonymously. So all you that took the time, took 30 minutes out of your life to do this, thank you. I really appreciate it. It's a big deal to try to make things safer and try to get OSHA to understand what the tower climber goes through. Apparently nobody else cares, but you guys do. So I really do appreciate it. I know it's a hassle. I know, you know, that's 30 minutes to an hour out of your life, but it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, apparently. I mean, they've never done it before, so. And if you guys want to download my response, I have it in PDF form. Go ahead. Go crazy. I have it on there. You can see the whole thing, what I uploaded to the FCC, and you can also, I have the links in there for Wireless Estimator, wirelessestimator.com, and the FCC site, which you just got to click on the link. It's just easier. So before today, I want to go over the hazards and incidents section. That's what I want to go over today, specifically hazards and incidents and my responses. But first, I want to thank Tower Safety. It's a training facility where the best get better. And if you can't go to them, they're in Arizona. They'll come to you, towersafety.com. And I'd like to thank them over there for helping sponsor my blogs and my podcasts. Thank you, Tower Safety. I really do appreciate it. It's a big deal. So let's get into it. Hazards and incidents. I'm going to start right off where they did in the RFI. So falls. Falls are currently the leading cause of fatalities among communication tower workers. OSHA believes that many falls result from the improper use of fall protection equipment or the failure to use any fall protection equipment at all. How are employers addressing fall hazards? So 100% tie-off, right? I mean, that's really the best that they can do, as well as supplying all the PPE. Are employers providing appropriate fall protection equipment to employees? Is it maintained and replaced when necessary? Many are, and most of them do maintain it. So what I'm saying is many are actually providing it and maintaining it. You know, that's a thing. Now, what happens is it isn't always maintained properly, and a lot of that is up to the tower climber to report problems with it. Now and then you have the foreman go by and inspect it for him. And I've used some pretty ratty ropes in my time for lanyards, but my safety lanyards, my Y lanyard was always something that I kept in tip-top shape, because if something happens, that should be tied off, so. But it varies from company to company based on the decision and based on budget. So what factors contribute to employees What factors contribute to employees failing to use fall protection while climbing or working? Common sense and safety. I got to tell you, when people don't use it, I mean, it's just because they're in a hurry usually. So I have common sense and safety. If someone is not using it, then they are not trained. Boy, I can't talk today, people. If someone is not using it, then they are not trained properly, or the company did not provide it, or they are stupid. I mean, really, stupidity plays a big part in this. Probably a combination of all three. Most people are in a hurry when they don't use it. Are the situations in which conventional fall protection, safety nets, or personal fall arrest systems is feasible? What alternatives can employees use for fall protections in these situations? There are going to be situations like that, and each one should be treated as a one-off. I don't think they're going to put nets up under the towers. I mean, that would be a major thing to put a net up. It would cost a lot of money. I can see the carriers going crazy over that. But as long as they're 100% tied off, use a lot of common sense. I think that's really the gist of it. Now and then you have safety equipment fail, but it's not too often. So it would be a hazard once, but then safe after that. You know, you got to make sure that they do that. Let me read my whole response. There can be situations like that, and each one should be treated as one-off. They should always be able to use some type of fall protection. If there is a situation like that at a tower site, and by like that, I mean where they have to put a net up, then the owners should put something to make sure that the worker is safe. It would be a hazard once, but then safe for everyone after that. I think that's, you know, there's always one-offs. There's always dangerous towers, which is why, you know, it'd be great to have. Was it Vern Fitzgerald started that Unsafe Towers database? I don't know how that's going. I should reach out to him. Just curious what, you know, it would be good to have a database of towers that aren't safe. And I think most tower owners would want to know if their towers aren't safe. So what are the ways in which fall protection systems or anchorage points on communication towers can fail? How can these failures be prevented? Can't talk today. So oftentimes they are not installed. I mean, really. If there's a cable grab, it needs to be maintained and inspected. Sometimes they aren't. You see crappy cable grabs, or I used to all the time. So preferably annually or every 3 years would be good for them to inspect them and look for anchor points. And anchor points, if installed, should also be inspected every 3 years. Climbing pegs should be inspected and replaced as needed. So that should be feedback from the climber. Climbing pegs break all the time. Yeah, people do stupid stuff. You know, they rig to a climbing peg. Should OSHA require built-in fall protection measures on new towers, existing towers? Would such requirements enhance worker safety? Definitely on new towers. There is no reason not to. On existing towers, I believe so. But it would be an expensive venture. I don't see anyone going for that unless they absolutely had to. Perhaps on all towers built over the last 5 or 10 years would be reasonable. That's how I see it. Structural issues. What new equipment is added to communication towers? The additional loading of the tower has the potential to overload and destabilize the structure. Older towers may need additional reinforcement to maintain the structural integrity as new equipment is added to them. Communication tower collapses have resulted in numerous fatalities in the past 2 years. Remember February of 2014? That was a big one. Let me go on. Which contractual party bears responsibility for ensuring that any structural work on the tower, such as modifications or demolition, is done safely from a structural perspective? What steps are employers taking to prevent collapses? So I started with two responses. I started with responsibility. That lies with the team and the tower owner, the structural engineer, the customer, and the crew doing the work. We really have to share the liability. That's how I see it. The customer needs to require that the structural engineer not only provides the loading requirements and the upgrades, but also the procedure to do the upgrade. They should do it all in one shot. And someone asked me that. I had to really think about that. Someone asked me that at the IWCE conference. The tower owner needs to approve the plan, and the tower crew needs to understand and sign off so that they can do the work properly. So, you know, it's not just saying, yeah, we can do it. It's understanding the plan. So when they put that out to bid, they should have each tower crew that's bidding on it read the plan and make sure they're qualified for it. It's a big deal. You know, we had how many? We had three people die, a firefighter and two climbers in February in West Virginia, remember? So steps taken. Most companies are reviewing the upgrade plans and verifying the steps with their given experiences. The crews and structural engineers need to be on the same page. That's really it. Everyone needs to be on the same page. But, you know, steps have to be taken. Can't just put it in the hands of the tower crew anymore. The structural engineer should really provide steps of how to, in my opinion. And if he doesn't know how, then maybe he should get with the crew and talk it over. The next one is hoisting materials and personnel. Base-mounted drum hoists are often used to hoist materials and personnel to working heights on communication towers. Hazards arise if hoists are not rated for lifting personnel or used for that purpose. OSHA is aware of the incidents in which have hoists have failed under these conditions. Also, overloading material hoists and improper rigging procedures can result in load striking the tower. Sorry, I had to repeat that. My screen died there. Sorry. It's been one of those mornings. So, like I said, loads striking the tower structure or workers located in the tower. OSHA knows of several deaths in the past 2 years that have resulted in these types of incidents. So, when are personnel hoists used? In my experience, rarely, but I'm not a broadcast guy. If you talk to broadcast guys, they would probably tell you all the time. So it depends on what niche you're in. I did a lot of dishes. I usually didn't climb over 500 feet. I did, but not often. So that's my experience. What types of hazard are associated with personnel and material hoists? What are the best practices for safely managing those hazards? So you need to have the proper winch and a good operator. I believe it's that simple. A good operator would make sure that the equipment's maintained properly. I probably should have given a longer answer, but you broadcast guys should answer that because you've done a lot of work there. How are capstan hoists used in tower work, and what types of operations are they used? Can they be used safely? So in my experience, obviously to raise equipment, I know here I'm a little vague, but I've never had a problem with one. As long as the operator is qualified and paying attention, they can be used safely if inspected and the operator is qualified. I didn't go into a lot of detail, but I know cellular guys use a lot of these. If again, it comes down to training and experience, you know, and also making sure the equipment's in good operating shape. Rarely had a problem. I have seen guys, you know, I'm going off here, but I have seen guys that just don't pay attention and something stupid happens. I've seen guys that just totally space and have had incidents, you know, because they weren't paying attention. It's easy to drift when you're doing it every day or for 8 hours. You know, you get bored, you get distracted, you have other things on your mind, but just got to pay attention. So let me go to the next statement here. What are the most common types of rigging hazards that occur on communication tower work sites? What can employers do to eliminate or minimize those hazards? So here's my response. Often, people don't know the load rating of the block, or they choose a poor termination point for the block. Also, the rope needs to be inspected. I've seen rope failures due to crappy rope. Also, I didn't put in here, I don't think, but knots. Anyways, let me go on. It needs to be inspected and replaced. There should always be spare rope available for any job. Winch failures happen, although I've never had that problem because we maintained our winches. But they do fail, and usually at the worst of times. One more thing, all the workers need to pay attention. If the worker rigs a tower for a light load and the ground crew tries to pull a heavy load, bad things happen. Now, what do I mean by that? Again, it's your termination point in the tower where you're going to rig your block. You got to pick a good solid place to terminate. You got to make sure you have a good solid wrap to go on the tower or bean or whatever you're going to use. You got to make sure it's rated for the load you're pulling up. We all do dumb things, and that's one of the dumb things we do. So are there, now this is the FCC statement, are there methods other than the use of a hoist or crane that can be used to lift material and personnel to a communication tower? Which methods and procedures are the safest? So my response is, if you can't pull it up by hand or carry it, I don't see another way to get it up there. Maybe someday the drones will be strong enough to carry payloads. You know, the one thing I didn't mention, I should have already uploaded this, was elevators. They do have elevators on those big towers, but boy, that's a lot of money. I don't see everyone putting an elevator in a tower. So let me. That's why I didn't bring it up. So the FCC's next question, what are the roles of different levels of the contracting chain in managing, rigging, and hoisting activities? Now here, I wasn't sure I understood the question. I mean, when they say contracting chain, it confuses me. However, on-site, I can explain the on-site work. Guys in the tower choose the anchor point. And maybe this isn't what they meant. Maybe they meant more the economic, you know, maybe they meant the different contractors. Maybe that's what they meant. Yeah, maybe I just misunderstood it because I put about the tower work, how they anchor it and how they do the work. Yeah, maybe I'm out in left field here. I think they meant something different now that I think about it. I went through the procedure of how they actually rig it and hoist it. Yeah, maybe I got this one wrong, or maybe I just misunderstood. Should have put a little more thought into it. So, sorry, I started drifting off there. But anyways, I put about how they choose the anchor point. They expect to pull it up, and then they also anchor it based on the load, obstructions, mounting location on the tower and access. Then the block is attached to the tower using straps, steel cable, or beaners. And then depending upon the weight of the load, the crew will operate the winch to pull it up. And, well, then the ground team is responsible for attaching the load, the rope, the cable properly so it can be pulled all the way up, but also position it properly for the attachment of the item to the tower. Then they need to plan how to rig it. You know, they'll have guy wire or they'll have a guy with a tag line is what I meant to say. So the rope's attached to make sure that the load swings out away from the tower and doesn't hit anything on the way up. The tag line's there to make sure that the load flies in a proper direction. You don't want to destroy it or anything else going up the tower. Yeah, I wonder if they meant, I might have misunderstood that question. If you guys fill that out, maybe they mean the, I don't know, when they say contracting chain, I bet they wonder how many contractors it goes through. You know, like when the carriers do stuff and it goes through different vendors. Anyways, on to the next question. The FCC says, makes a statement, radio frequency hazards. Much research has been done in the health effects of overexposure to radio frequencies. General health effects reviews have found that high levels of exposure to radio frequencies may result in burns. Oh yeah, no kidding. In addition, the link between exposure to radio frequencies and cancer, reproductive diseases, and neurological effects have been thoroughly explored. So, what methods are employers using to protect workers from overexposure to radio frequency? They do a lot of things. They train people, you know, like the dangers, like when Sirius and XM were out there at the regular broadcast sites. That should be part of the hazard assessment. Also, RF exposure meters, like the NARTA meter is what I think of. So the FCC then asks, is there need for employers to institute comprehensive radio frequency monitoring programs on communication tower work sites? What would a good program look like? Well, yeah, it would be simple. Add it to the hazard assessment, require RF safety training, and assign each climber an RF exposure meter with the requirement that they have it on their body at all times. I mean, really, to me, that seems straightforward, but maybe they want more. So they would also need to be trained to use the meter properly. Some of them you just turn on, you assume it's right, but you have it for the right frequencies for that site. And you also got to make sure the battery's not dead. A lot of them just beep and buzz like an old pager. You don't know the battery's dead if it doesn't work. So that, to me, it's that simple. It's just part of the PPE, radio exposure meter, and then proper training. The next statement by the FCC, weather. Communication tower workers work outside during all seasons and in all climates. They can be exposed to heat, cold, wind, snow, and ice. Storm conditions can quickly arise when workers are at elevation, and it can be difficult to descend the tower quickly. I agree with that. I was caught in a couple storms on a tower. So what are the specific weather-related hazards to which communication tower workers are exposed? The FCC has a good question. So my answer is, obviously, heat, exhaustion, sunstroke, dehydration, severe sunburn, cold, frostbite, hypothermia, numbness, and stiffness causing climbing difficulties. I don't know if anyone ever had stiff hands or stiff feet when they came down from a tower, but it really sucks. Lightning is always a risk. Most climbers try to get off the tower. You can't always. It's still scary. And then the other one is ice. You know, falling ice is a risk. You're climbing an icy tower. You know, people think you slip off when you're really... I've climbed icy towers. You don't really slip off, you know. It's not like slick ice. I mean, it does cause problems if it breaks, but a lot of guys, when they go up an icy tower, you know, they take a wrench and just pound and break the ice off. But I'm more worried about the falling ice. I had a vehicle destroyed one time. I just couldn't believe how quickly it warmed up. I was up on working at a tower site, and I was in a shelter. I think I was commissioning a transmitter. And ice just start falling off. Man, caused thousands of dollars of damage to my truck. Anyway, it was a cold, cold day. It just warmed up really quick. It was just a freak thing of nature that warm air came rolling through. And the ice started just flying off the tower. Normally, I know better. You know, normally it's not an issue. It's just one of those weird things. Anyway, next the FCC asks, how does a crew monitor and respond to changing weather conditions, including storms? And I mean, it's weather report. My answer was weather report, smartphone apps. You know, I look at the weather all the time on the app. I get alerts for storms. And they look at the sky. You have to be aware of your surroundings. That was a big thing in the old days. You just looked around. If you saw a storm coming in, you really had to think about what you were going to do. There was this one time, and I just talked about this with a guy. I was up on a tower. I climbed 700 feet. There was no elevator. Me and another guy. And we were doing our work, and it was a broadcast tower, but we were working on a trunking system. So we were doing work. We had 2 hours of work left. You know, it was like, it was 1 or 2 o'clock, and a storm was rolling in. We could see it rolling in from a distance. Now, this was in the northeast, so storms roll in slow. We had plenty of time to get down, but the problem is going down 700 feet and then coming back up 700 feet, that's a good chunk of time. It's at least an hour till you get everything, you know, situated. So we just finished the work. The storm rolled in. We strapped to the tower. We rode the storm out. Luckily, no lightning. We didn't see lightning in the storm. That would have probably got us off the tower if we would have saw lightning in the distance. But it was just rain. We strapped to the tower, finished our work. We were done for the day. We didn't have to go back up. We didn't wait for the rain or anything. We just finished our work. And you take things like that into account. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do or what you would have done. It's a very personal decision whether you want to ride a storm out or not. But it was summer. It was a quick storm. It was just rain. And it passed in 20 or 30 minutes. Would have cost us, you know, an hour or two if we would have went down and up. You know, with the tools and cleaning everything up, it's just easier to finish. So anyway, you really got to use a lot of common sense. And you know what? In this industry, I really wonder how many people have common sense. There's some brilliant guys out there with good common sense and mechanical skills. And then there's other guys out there that have trouble walking and chewing gum at the same time. So the next thing OSHA asks is about fatigue. So they say fatigue. OSHA believes that fatigue can affect communication tower workers in several ways. Climbing a communication worker is physically demanding, and OSHA is concerned that fatigue due to exertion can be hazardous to tower workers. No kidding. Accelerated work timelines can also result in tower workers working very long hours, and OSHA understands that communication tower workers may travel long distances to reach remote work sites, which can result in workers being fatigued before they even begin work. Very common, very common. In fact, ProPublica brought that up on their special. So next they say, what hazards are faced by a worker who finds it physically challenging to perform expected tasks such as climbing a tower or performing self-rescue? What impact can this have on other crew members? To me, falling's the biggest risk for everyone. When you get tired, you could let go. You could make a mistake. You take a lot of chances. Some guys just don't use common sense. You know, you just got to tie off and rest. So many times a timer can tie off, drink some water, and rest. You should always have water on you in the air. It's just something you should do. If you have good ground crews, you know, ground workmates, they're going to make sure you have water in the air. So the workmates should be aware of the condition the climber is in. They should be paying attention, because if there is the possibility of a rescue, if the climber is too tired to climb, he probably shouldn't attempt self-rescue. But controlled descent is easier than climbing, so it may be a viable alternative. Just something to think about. Then the FCC asks, what are the common causes of worker fatigue at communication tower work sites? Hey, long days, heavy lifting, extreme weather. When I say extreme weather, when it's extremely hot or extremely cold, either one, it wears you out. Does me. Next, the FCC asks, what are the effects on fatigue on tower worker safety, and what type of incidents occur as a result of worker fatigue? Okay, my answer here was, if a worker gets too tired, they make mistakes. I mean, that's really it. You take a lot of shortcuts, you make mistakes, mental mistakes, miscalculations, and that can lead to bad things. You rush. When people rush, they take a lot of shortcuts to get done. So this puts more work on all the workmates to perform. If all four crew members are climbers, then they should shuffle the work. And I still believe that. I think you should take turns climbing. And I was one of those guys who went to climb all the time, but I still think it's a good idea to rotate duties. My opinion, that's why it's better to have four climbers than two, or one especially. So then the FCC goes into other common hazards. What other hazards are present in communication tower worker work, and what types of incidents are resulting from those hazards? What can be done to protect employees from those hazards. Hey, there's a lot of them. Bee stings, allergies, snake bites, spider bites, exertion, you know, it goes on and on. And the best thing you can do is just make sure you're prepared for it. That's about the best you can do. What are some of the health and safety considerations involved in working in a communications tower installed? Let me start over. This one's a long one. What are some health and safety considerations involved in working with communications equipment installed on non-dedicated tower structures, such as water towers, building silos, and electrical transmission towers? Each structure has a dedicated risk. I mean, you really got to be aware of what structure you're going on. I can't tell you, water tanks are one of the things that people climb, and they underestimate a lot of stuff. They don't realize that, you know, they're round on the top. Some of these guys walk, they don't tie off, and they walk over the edge and then they slide down. There's nothing there to catch them. You know, it's just use common sense, tie a rope off. People just miscalculate things. They just don't understand. You should always be tied off on a water tank. Once you go, you're not stopping. Electrical towers, you got to be certified to work around high voltage. You know, it's just one of those things. Buildings, a lot of safety issues on buildings. I mean, I could just hundreds. Some guys just fall off the side. They're not paying attention. It's black and white. Silos, guys work on silos. Again, they just miscalculate. Anyway, these are all risks. So, well, that's the end of it. I didn't get through it very well. It's been a rough morning, I guess. I had technical difficulties, but listen, be smart, be safe, do the best you can out there. Pay attention, just really do the best you can. But if you guys can, I would take the time to fill out at least some of the RFI. Just fill out some responses. That's such a big deal. I'm just so disappointed. Everyone talks safety, but here they have a way to influence OSHA to actually come up with some ways or let OSHA know what's going on, if nothing else. And just nobody's doing it. Anyway, I'll get off that. So I'd like to thank Tower Safety for helping me out, sponsoring me. And Hubble Foundation has a new video out. I threw that there at the end. I liked it. If you get a chance, wadeforwireless.com, get on there and take a look at the video. Click on Tower Safety's icon, click on their picture, and then I have a bunch of stuff at the bottom. You know, I have my scope of work training and I have my books for sale, you know, the log book and the site aid and the tower workers book, you know, if you're an introduction to tower climbing. Then I have other deals at the bottom, and then I have a, you know, my drone picture down there to clear bottom. Anyway, just throwing it out there, everyone. Be smart, be safe, pay attention to what you're doing, and take care of yourselves out there. Remember, I know you, for those of you that just don't think OSHA's helping at all, they're making the effort. So why don't we make the effort to help them help us? See ya.